Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to PhillyConnects.com's Eagles-Giants postgame show. We will be doing some Flyers, Sixers, and Cubs World Series winners later on, but we're going to start with the Eagles somewhere today in between the political commercials. We did squeeze in a football game, and it wasn't much more entertaining. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that it was entertaining. It wasn't much more uplifting than the political commercials. With me, Gordon Glantz. Gordon, zero in on, I can't say list all the mistakes because you'll take up the whole show, but zero in on one or two crucial elements that cost the Eagles this football game.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, no matter where you're playing, whether you're playing on the home, the road, on Mars, London, wherever you're playing, you can't just fall behind 14-0 before anybody is in their seats yet, you know, before you blink. And they did that. And so you're trudging uphill the rest of the game. And, you know, we've all seen games where teams come from behind. We've seen games where teams come from behind trailing by that much, if not more, in the second half. But it's just not something you want to do. And it's a pattern they've been getting into on the road. And just those two interceptions, you know, it wasn't like defensive backs made great plays on them. It was just, you know, throws that were off target and bad reads by Carson Wentz. And, you know, so they fell into a 14-0 hole. They clearly were targeting the Otis McKelvin, you know, for the touchdowns. And so you fall behind there. And then, you know, obviously, I mean, it goes the last 2 weeks. You know, last week we previewed the Dallas game, but, you know, there were some crucial coaching decisions. You know, and it was funny from the coaching decisions that we criticized Doug Peterson for. The only one he said he regretted was not going for it on fourth down after a penalty, and you know, instead of taking the points off the board, and instead of taking he would have gone for it on fourth down and taken the points off the board, which actually he did the right thing there by leaving the points on the board on the road. And then this week, you know, on two occasions he takes points off the board, you know, what would have been easy field goals for Caleb Sturgis, and goes for it on fourth down, and then compounds that with just ridiculous calls on fourth down. So, you know, you try like a bootleg with Carson Wentz that doesn't work. You try running, Darren Sproles seems to be their number one back right now. You know, Ryan Matthews is still the guy they still use down by the goal line, or even Kenyon Barner, who they use down by the goal line today. Instead of using one of those guys, they, you know, send Darren Sproles into the line and they don't get the first down. So not only is it a decision, it's a poor decision to go for it on fourth down, especially on the road. It's even poor decisions with the play calls. And then, you know, obviously you can see the final score, and those two field goals would have made a difference.
We have Josh Landsberg with us now as well. Josh, Gordon mentioned, you know, last week the one decision that Doug Peterson said he regretted was not taking that field goal off the board and then going for it 4-1 after the Cowboys picked up the penalty. I guess my question for you is, one, do you think he made the right decisions today on those fourth down plays by going for it? And two, if not, do you think he overcompensated or overcorrected based on what happened last week?
I think I would say that on the first fourth down, I agree with Gordon that the play calling was bad on both plays. But the first fourth and one he actually went for, I did not have a problem with it. It was early in the game, but it would have made it a one-score game. And I didn't have a problem with going for it there because if they would have kicked the field goal, it still would have been a two-score game, I believe, at the time. But still, even so, I think he got a little overconfident on fourth down plays because I believe Joe Buck mentioned it, the announcer of the game, that I think he was like 5 for 5 or something like that on fourth downs this season so far. So I think he got a little bit overconfident that he's been so successful converting like fourth and shorts that he was confident he could do it again. So the first fourth down I actually didn't have as much of a problem with. The second one is where I have a real problem with. I should have – he left points on the board, and it turned out to be the difference in the game. Gordon mentioned the two field goals. Not the two field goals, including the blocked one also. Any one of those three, if they make even one of those – then they kick up, they make it 20. It would have been 28-26 instead of 28-23 at the end of the game. And they kick a field goal there within field goal range to win 29-28 and close out the game. And yeah, the Giants would get the ball with a little time left, but the Eagles would have probably won the game even if they make one of three of those field goals. So I would say the first fourth down that he went for it, I didn't have as big a problem with it, but the second fourth down I did have a bigger problem with.
Yeah, good point, Josh, about the score because they might not have a lot of time with because if the Eagles are in a – only down two there, they're probably not throwing the ball on, you know, three straight downs or turned out before. But they would have run the ball a little bit and taken off some time, forced the Giants to use their timeout or something along those lines. Gordon, you mentioned the road games earlier, and I posed this question in my preview on PhillyFanatics.com, and if you want to read the game story, those of you can check it out, called Rookie Mistakes, it's already up there. But are they having trouble winning road games, or are they having trouble winning close games? Which is the bigger problem?
That's the $64,000 question, isn't it, Eric? I guess we'll have to see how the season plays out because, they did win a game on the road earlier in the year in Chicago that wasn't a close game. So, it could go – I think the jury is still deliberating on that one. Might be a little combination of the two. I think, a close game on the road, it's just – it gets difficult for, a rookie coach, rookie quarterback, crowd gets loud. All kinds of factors like that. So I think it's the fact that, it's on the road and the fact that it's also close. I think it might be a combination of the two, but I think we'll have to see how the rest of the season plays out. If they do maybe go and blow somebody out on the road, or if they pull out a close game on the road, we'll have to see. But I think that is interesting to see which one it is, and I think we still have half a season to kind of sort that out.
Josh, how about you? All four of these losses, they've either had the ball at the end with a chance to tie or go ahead. We're in the case of the Cowboys game. They didn't close it out when they could have, and never got the ball back. What's contributing to that? What do you think is contributing to their failure in close games? Oh, Josh, I can't hear you. Josh, can you hear us? All right, Josh, we can't hear you. So,
I'm here now.
Okay. What's contributing to their problems at the end of close games?
Well, I think that having a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach is certainly a big issue. But I would say of the two you mentioned, I think it's a great question you brought up. It's as Gordon said, it's a $64,000 question. But I would say out of the two, it's more the road games are bothering them than they're just so much better at home. I mean, it is true. All four of their wins have been blowout games. They've won all four of them by 10 points or more, and they've been successful in blowout games and haven't been able to win a close game yet. We'll see if maybe, get the answer road or home. If they have a home game that's close and they win, then we'll get the answer as the season goes on. As Gordon said, it'll kind of play out. But I think it's more of a problem of road versus home. They're just so much better at home this year. Having a rookie quarterback and rookie head coach, they just seem more comfortable at home. I think I mentioned in a previous show a couple weeks ago, the Fletcher Cox, you look at his name was mentioned maybe once today. He tends to play much better at home than on the road. A lot of their players play better at home than on the road. So I think that it's more of a road problem than a home problem. I could see this team, I thought they would win this game. I thought between the two games at Dallas and at the Giants, they had to win one of these games to really kind of keep themselves in the playoff picture. Now they might drop to like a 9-7 or an 8-8 team instead of a 10-6 team. But I still think it's possible they could go 10-6. But to do that, I think they need to go, even though they're playing Atlanta and Green Bay, a couple good teams at home. Eric and Gordon, I'm curious your thoughts on this also. I might be a little bit overconfident in their ability to play at home, but I honestly think Green Bay is not as good this year as they have been in years past. And I think they could go as good as maybe 8-0 or 7-1 at home and then go something like 2-6. If they go 8-0, let's say, and 2-6 on the road and still make the playoffs at 10-6. I think there's that much of a discrepancy between how good they are at home versus how bad they are on the road.
I don't know how they're going to handle Matt Ryan and Julio Jones next week. Julio Jones, which is actually where I was going to go with my next question to Gordon. And we've been focusing on the offense, Gordon, and Doug Peterson, but Eli Manning, he had four touchdown passes today. Three of them were in excess of 25 yards. Two of them, the receivers were wide open. One of them that he got wide open, he didn't start. Well, he was pretty open too on that one, and the big plays, it's three really big plays, four touchdowns, but we'll say three really big plays for touchdowns. And the other side of that, aside from the defensive backs, is he was only sacked once today. And I expected to see more of what they did against the Vikings, a team that also couldn't run the ball very well, with more pressure and knocking Eli off his game. So, Gordon, were you surprised we didn't see more pressure from Jim from the Eagles defense as a whole? I won't even blame the coordinator, but Jim Schwartz. And what's going on in the secondary? That the guys were just wide open.
The thing was, I mean, if you're not going to get pressure, I know his whole system is predicated on pressure with the front four, and then, you know, at least they will force the quarterback to go somewhere he doesn't or wants to, goes a little quicker than where he wants to go, or you know, maybe force him to throw an errant pass. They weren't doing that much at all today, especially on some of those key plays that you mentioned. Only one sack, and I think there was only a few real pressures and hurries in the pocket. And, you know, you're going to, if that's going to be the case with the corners that the Eagles have, which is a clear weakness, you know, and they have your slot corner, Ron Brooks. Granted, he's more of a stopgap kind of guy. I don't think he's a long-haul building block. You might as well start dialing up some blitzes to change things up. And I was really surprised that we didn't start to see that more. It was still, you know, rush four and try to get everybody covered. And, you know, linebackers did a decent job. You know, they were trying to hit this guy, Ty, out of the backfield. I don't know if he's a tight end or a fullback, but, you know, he must have had 10 catches for 10 yards today. I mean, every time he caught the ball, they were right on him. But, you know, but they were hitting the wide receivers when they really needed to. They hit the guys, and you know, when you have time to throw and you're Eli Manning's a different quarterback when he's under pressure and when he's not under pressure. And I think they really needed to dial up a few blitzes, whether it's from a linebacker or a safety, a corner, anything, just to kind of mix things up a little bit, at least to give them something to worry about. So I was surprised they didn't come with something when they weren't getting home with their front four, because they really weren't. They were. I don't know if Leotis McKelvin is playing hurt or if he's just not a very good player, but he was clearly struggling today, and he was targeted today. And there's a lot of goats, but he's pretty high on my goat list for today's loss. So, yeah, I mean, the corners are really struggling out there. It's pretty obvious. One good thing, I don't think this Eagles team gets any further than 8-8, you know, whether they went home on the road or on the moon, wherever. But I think we know they have some people to build around, and we know now where they really need to bring in guys in the future. And really, I mean, wide receiver and corner are clearly the two obvious needs on this team.
So I was going to ask you to follow up Josh's question, but I think you just answered it by saying you're looking at like 8-8 or somewhere in there. So, and Josh, I've been at 8-8, so that didn't change. You know, that hasn't changed really since, even when they were 3-0, I went back to, I was lower than that, and I went to 8-8 after they started 3-0, but I'm not getting higher. Josh, let's shift in the game today and talk about what happened this week with another Josh, Josh Huff. And did the Eagles handle this correctly?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, he definitely, I think what he did is potential, you know, definitely could be a reason to cut a guy, but, and it's not, I think if he was even a bigger part of their offense and a superstar, I don't think they would cut him. I think they would look past it and maybe suspend him for a game or two, or put him on some kind of probationary period. If he was like their number one wide receiver, like a Terrell Owens type of guy, I don't think they would have cut him for sure. But since I think they felt like that, you know, this type of behavior is not acceptable, they wanted to make an example of him maybe, and he's not a star player, but he was contributing. He did have a kickoff return for a touchdown. And as Gordon said, wide receiver and cornerbacks are their two weakest positions. And you just, you know, cut a guy and you sign a rookie off the street. You actually made a big catch and had a pretty decent game. But I think that it was a bold move that they made. But I'm okay with the move. I think it's just a really stupid thing that he did, you know, having weapons. And he makes a comment afterwards. He's like, oh, I'm an NFL football player. You know, every NFL football player has a gun. And but he didn't have a permit for it, and he had marijuana in his car also. So I think all those things kind of combined, I don't mind this decision by the Eagles.
Yeah, he didn't have the permit for Jersey. He does have one from Texas, but of course that's not Jersey doesn't reciprocate. So it's you didn't have a permit. You're right, not for that gun, not in that state. Gordon, it happened on Tuesday, and Doug Peterson on Wednesday said, you know, as of now, he's still going to be playing against the Giants, and on Thursday they cut him. And I guess my question is, you know, again, did they mishandle this? Was there miscommunication? And did Josh Huff's comments on Wednesday, which Josh just alluded to, did that hurt him and make their decision? Did it change their decision, or did it just confirm their decision that they were already going to make, do you think?
I don't think he helped himself with his comments. But I think that they were spending that day internally really looking at the details of the case. And until it goes to trial, and he's a guy who could be looking at jail time, I think until it goes to trial, we're not going to know all the details of the situation. But I think that there's even more to it than we know, and it was almost a no-brainer. I don't think it's something you do very easily. I mean, you know, there's the players' union and a grievance process, and, you know, I mean, you really have to think all of this through before you let a guy go. When I first heard about it, I'm like, okay, he's not going to be active this week, or he might be suspended by the league, or, you know, and then the more I heard, I'm thinking, like, this guy might really go to jail over this. Probably not a long jail term, but he still might go to jail over this. And, you know, they probably really had to make a decision. And obviously what he said about it didn't help too much. But, you know, I think I hate to speculate because I don't know. But, you know, Howie Roseman gave a press conference that was sort of like he just kept repeating himself over and over again. That we have a process and we went through the process and this was the best decision for the team. And he had every question that was asked, that's what he said. But one thing kind of slipped out in the course of that press conference. I don't know if you saw it. There was a comment about, you know, not having a gun at the practice facility. You know, you mentioned, well, you can't have a gun in Jersey. And I believe he was coming from the practice facility when he was driving over the bridge. So therefore, if you do the math, if you connect, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, he must have had the gun at the practice facility, you know, unless he left it somewhere else and picked it up afterwards. But, you know, you have a gun at the practice facility, you know, and then when you're going home from the practice facility, you're speeding over the bridge with marijuana in your car into a state that doesn't allow the firearm. I think you're not in a good situation. I mean, even his lawyer, you know, Fortunato Perry, is a pretty well-known defense lawyer. He wasn't acting too positive when he was interviewed on the news right after it happened. That, you know, it's a tough case, and, you know, we're going to have to do the best we can. And, you know, he kind of admitted that it's, you know, he's really kind of in a bind. So, you know, I don't think they wanted an average player on their hands. I mean, he is a good kick returner. He's a good special teams player in terms of you know, getting under kicks and making tackles. But as a receiver, he's just average. He really is in an ideal world, he's a fourth or fifth receiver who returns kicks. And, you know, I think they kind of weighed all that. You know, like Josh said, maybe if he was somebody else, they would have thought twice about it, but he wasn't somebody else. He was part of Chip Kelly's regime, an Oregon guy who was probably overdrafted because he was from Oregon. And I think they just kind of, you know, weighed certain things on one end of the scale and weighed everything else on the other side of the scale, and all the negatives, you know, outweighed, you know, the reasons to keep him around, and they made their decision.
Yeah, and for those who are listening who maybe don't know, but many of us do, it's not all that far from the Eagles practice facility to the Walt Whitman Bridge. So he got pulled over around 11 o'clock in the morning. So unless you believe that, you know, he picked up the gun and the bag of weed somewhere between the NovaCare complex and the short drive to the Walt Whitman Bridge, then he must have had it at the practice facility. Again, we don't know that, but, you know, he, like I said, unless he picked it up in that, what is it, about a mile maybe from
right,
you know, from the practice facility to the bridge, it's hard to believe. Anyway, again, if those listening, this is, I'm Eric Fisher. We have Josh Landsberg, Gordon Glantz with us, PhillyFanatics.com. Blog Talk Radio Show. Please check out the site. Rookie Mistakes is our headline for the Eagles game. Josh, but let's shift off the Eagles now, Josh, and get your reaction to an epic Game 7 and the Cubs, after 108 years, come back from a 3-1 deficit in the World Series and win the World Series. Like I said, just an incredible drama in Game 7. For Josh is on the West Coast. It wasn't quite as late as it is for us here on the East Coast, but I stayed up and watched that whole thing. Josh, what was your reaction watching that game and your reaction to the Cubs winning the series?
Yeah, it's one of the benefits of living on the West Coast. That game was a little bit before 10 o'clock my time instead of a little bit before 1 o'clock East Coast time. But, yeah, just an unbelievable game, Game 7. What a way to end a 108-year curse. And I was proven right and wrong at the same time. If you remember, before the series, I picked the Cubs to win in 7 games, which ended up happening. But last week on the show, we talked about it, and I said correctly that the Cubs were going to win Game 5 with John Lester pitching, which they did. And then I thought the Indians were still going to end up winning it in Game 6 or Game 7 because they had their ace. Even if they didn't win in Game 6, they had their ace going in Game 7, who pitched really well in Games 1 and Games 4. but he did not pitch as well in Game 7, obviously, and maybe the short rest got to him. So just an unbelievable way to finish. I thought the most questionable move that was made, that Joe Maddon would have looked like a big goat if the Cubs end up losing that game, is taking out Kyle Hendricks, John Lester, him is their ace. Hendricks might end up winning the Cy Young this year, actually. He had the lowest ERA in the National League. He took him out after 4 2/3 innings pitched, I think only 60-something pitches he had thrown. So I think that was just an extremely questionable move. He brings in John Lester, and the Indians get a couple runs. And why take out your starter so early in the game? It just didn't make sense to me. And bring in John Lester on short rest, and it just didn't make any sense. They end up getting away with it. They end up, you know, being up 5-1 and then 6-3, and then the Indians come back to make it 6-6, and they eventually win 8-7 in extra innings. So just an unbelievable Game 7, a great victory for the Cubs. I think for me this was a win-win. I wasn't really rooting for either team. I would have been happy for either team. You know, Cubs end 108-year drought. The Indians would have ended, you know, drought they had since 1948. So really, 68-year drought for them. So, but yeah, Tough for the Indians. That's twice in a row now. They lose the Game 7 this year. And in 1997, the last time they were in the World Series, they lose a Game 7 in which I believe it was Jose Mesa blew the save in Game 7 of that World Series, pitched for the Phillies as well. They end up losing in Game 7 in 1997 as well to the Florida Marlins, I believe. So just tough for the Indians, but happy for Cubs fans out there.
Yeah, the symmetry there of losing Game 7.
Yeah, and Cleveland did get the drought broken overall as a city with LeBron James and the Cavaliers winning. So they didn't get lucky and have two championships in the same year, but they at least have the basketball side.
Yeah, and like you point out, the symmetry of losing Game 7 in extra innings both times now. Gordon, before I come to you on this, we have a caller on the line with the last four digits, 8775. Caller, do you have a question?
Yes, this is Ben from Philadelphia. I was actually calling talk a little bit about the Eagles' frustrating loss.
Okay, go ahead. Bring up your gut.
Yeah, so I watching the game, I was basically putting the whole loss on the coach. But in thinking about it a little bit more after, I just think it's a total team loss. The offense put them in a hole early, and the defense, after they made it 21-17, they let the Giants go right down the field and go back up 11. And then the offense still at the end of the game had a shot with four chances from the 11-yard line, and it was all on Wentz's shoulders, and he came up short as well.
Yeah, well, we did talk about that. I'm sorry, is it Adam that you said?
Ben, it's Ben.
Ben, I'm sorry, Ben. Ben,
yeah, no
we talked about it earlier, but on the fourth down plays, would you have gone for it, or like as Peterson did, or do you think he made the right, you know, do you think he made the right decision, or would you have kicked the field goal?
I mean, I just don't like going for it. I like the idea of being aggressive, but I don't like chasing points that early in the game. You know, you're down 14-0 right away, and so fine, maybe you go for it on the first time, but then once you don't get it, I also think the play calling on both those plays was terrible. But once you don't get it the first time, you got to just line up the second time, learn from your mistake, take the 3 points, because if that was the case, they would have had a chip shot game-winning field goal at the end.
Yeah. And you're right. And then the other question we raised with that, which I'll ask right back at you, was, you know, do you think his decision was influenced by the fact that last week he said he should have gone for it on 4th and 1, taking those 3 points off the board against the Cowboys and going for it, and he was sort of kicking himself for not being aggressive. Do you think that influenced his decision this week to go for it instead of kicking the field goal?
It may have. I think it does play a part into it. I think he, you know, as – I'm not giving him a pass as a rookie head coach, but I think he is starting to second-guess himself on various different things week to week and also even series to series on different plays. I think he thinks, oh, if it worked this way, they were also 5-for-5 on 4th down coming into this game, so maybe he thought that they would be more successful. But that zone read play hadn't worked all game, and they kept trying to do it. Even if the scouting said that, you got to make the proper adjustments. But I think it did play a part into it after not being aggressive last week. But you got, there's a fine line between being too aggressive and hurting your team versus putting yourself in a chance to win.
Good points. Let me take your last part you said there, Ben, and take it to Gordon Glantz. Gordon, do you think that Doug Peterson is starting to question himself some and you know, change his decision making based on, you know, questioning what he's done before?
I think he's feeling his way. I think there's a little bit of an aspect of, you know, taking the temperature of the locker room. You know, I've said this many times. All players really want from their coach is to put them in a position where they can excel and where they can win games. And, you know, a coach like, especially a rookie coach who was a player, you know, he didn't play much on the field, but he was, you know, in the locker room, he was a player. I think what's weighing a lot on his mind is he wants the players to know that he has confidence in them, that he has confidence in his offense, that they can go and get that fourth down. And I think that's really weighing kind of heavy on his mind against what's really the tactical move to make, you know, as a head coach. So I think he has to kind of justify those things in his head a little bit and to understand when is the right time and wrong time to do it. And I don't know if he quite has a feel for it yet. I think he's trying to show his players that, you know, I have confidence in you, but at the same time, you know, the players might feel a little bit like this guy's not making the right decisions and he's costing us a game. So it's a really risky. It's as risky it is to go for it on fourth down. The aftermath of it is risky as well. You know, one thing I want to say, we talked about close games and is it the road or is it close games? I think this team, obviously, and we talked about corners and wide receivers, they just don't have enough playmakers. And when you get into a close game, you guys are going to step up and make plays. Jordan Hicks is a playmaker. He made plays last year, and he made a big play last week at the end of the first half, and he made a big play this week to get an interception. But they don't have a lot of guys like that on either side of the ball. They have guys who carry out their assignments the best they can, but they're not guys who are really looking to step up at key moments of the game and make a play, that they want to be the guy to make the play and feel like they can make the play. And, you know, in close games, whether you're home or on the road, I think it's even magnified more on the road. You know, I think that's what they lack, and it's not anything that they're going to be able to correct now. It's something they're going to have to correct in the off season.
Thank you, Gordon. And, Ben, thank you for the call. Great questions and great comments.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thank you. Josh, let's switch to you. We're switch topics real quickly, squeeze in a little Sixers talk before we go into archive. You wrote your Sixers notebook this week, and your first thing you said was Joel Embiid's already the best player on the team. He proved it again yesterday with 22 points against the Cavaliers, but it was another one-point loss or another close loss for the Sixers with 1 point last night. But you know, another close one for the Sixers. Josh, it's 0-5. Are we at the point yet where we're going to start worrying when they're going to win their first game, or do we think these close calls, it's just going to, they're going to eventually win one of these?
I was reading your email that you send weekly before the show to, you know, as we prepare for the show about, you know, are we going to play the game where that we talk about the Sixers, when are they going to get their first win? I think it's still a little bit too early for that. I think maybe if they go 0-10 or something like that, then we could start looking and saying, when are they going to get their first win? That's, I think, what we did last year when this kind of happened, when they got off to, you know, really didn't get a win. I think, I don't know, I don't remember what game they eventually got their win on. I think they started like at least 0-10, if not even worse than that last year. I think, you know, maybe at 0-10 you start playing that game, when do they get their first victory? But pretty impressive. You mentioned the 1 point loss to the Cavaliers. I mean, they're undefeated. They're the world champs. You know, so even though, yes, it's a loss, but, and you know, you say there, sometimes people believe there are no moral victories in sports. I'm not sure where I fall on that one way or the other, but I think, you know, Brett Brown does have them playing hard. They are a very young team. They're missing a lot of their pieces that could help them win some of these games. So I think they will eventually break through and get a victory. But certainly they've had a couple games they could have won. Like I said, the first game of the year, I think I talked about in my notebook, they should have probably beat the Thunder in that game, but weren't able to close it out. So, it might be I haven't looked at the schedule, but it might be a little while before we see their first victory.
Well, they do have 4 games in this week coming up, so we'll be close when we talk next week, and we'll see if we're going to near. They have the Jazz. They got a home-and-home with the Pacers. And then they play at Atlanta, I think. So that'll be their 4. If they haven't won, they'll be 0-9. So then we could save that for next week.
Yeah.
Hopefully not, because that wasn't supposed to happen this year. But anyway, we're going to wrap this up, the live show, and then we'll go into archive where we'll talk a little Flyers, maybe follow up the Sixers a little bit. We'll do our final thoughts. So thank you for listening, everybody. Next week, of course, we'll talk to you after the Falcons game. Check out PhillyFanatics.com, rookie mistake story, and a whole bunch of stuff. Josh's notebook, my Flyers notebook's up there, Sixers notebook, and my column will be up soon. So thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Gordon, let's shift gears to the Flyers briefly. They did come back and win three games this week. They're still having these awful starts where they fall into a hole every game. I addressed that in my notebook. What's your impression of why they keep they've only had a lead after one period once this year. So they played 12 games or 13 games now. They've had one lead after the first period. What's going on?
Yeah, I think that you hit it right on the head right there. I mean, you can't, just like we talked about with the Eagles, you can't throw two interceptions and fall behind 14-0 before you blink. You can't really fall behind constantly in hockey. I mean, no goals are guaranteed. You can fall behind 2-0 right away, and there's no guarantee that you're even going to score two goals to catch up. They've been fortunate that they have, been a little bit more, have a little more firepower this year, and some lines are clicking, and they are catching up in some games. But you just can't count on that night after night. And why it's happening, I really don't know. It may just be kind of the personality makeup of the team. It could be the veteran leadership. I'm really not sure. And then the other factor that, I mentioned last week, I just don't think the goaltending is quite there yet. I mean, last night they doubled up on shots on the Canadiens, very good team in their building, and the Flyers, doubled up on shots on them and still lost the game. So, Montreal's goalie did his job. The Flyers goalie, not many shots, let in, with five goals. So, they need the goaltending and their defense. Delzato just came back. Gudas was out when the season began, and they're still trying to, still trying to get their defensive pairings together and get guys who are used to one another. And that's, you need to blindly trust, read each other's minds almost, really have a defensive partner. And then you really want to have at least two pairs of guys, your first and second pair that really have, who are really in sync with one another. Sometimes you kind of have to let that third pair sort of, let it kind of be a work in progress. But your top four pairings, your top four defensemen, your top two pairings, you really need to have two guys who are really kind of in sync with one another. And I think that might be a little problem, too, and that might be part of the reason that they're falling behind in some of these games. Maybe there's some defensive mistakes. It's not always defensive mistakes, but in some cases it is. So, there's a lot of contributing factors. All in all, I think they'll be okay. I like both these goalies. One of them will get hot and kind of get them on a little bit of a winning streak, and I like the fact that a lot of guys are contributing to the offense. I think they'll be okay, but right now they're still kind of feeling their way through some things. I want to say on the Sixers real quick, it's one guy, if I can single out, as a reason they're not winning, is that Robert Covington's kind of killing them right now. He's just not scoring the kind of points you expect him to score. And if he would come out and have some of those games we've expected from him, not that he's a superstar, but he's an NBA player. He's not one of these guys who belongs in the D-League that they have on their roster. He's an NBA player, and he needs to score 12, 14, 16 points in some of these games instead of 3 or 5 points. And if they got that, they might pull out a close game like they had against Oklahoma City or, against Cleveland. And, I don't think it matters as much who they're playing. I just think it matters as much if everybody who they need to contributes on the same night.
He was scoreless in two games, and he was 1-for-10 last night. Yeah, that is hurting them. You're right. I mentioned my notebook. That's scored such both the defenseman. I think they're going to have growing pains with Provorov and Gostisbehere, and I think that's to be expected. And the guy sort of stepped up is Brandon Manning's been their best defenseman, I think. Which is certainly a surprise. I think people had him like off the roster or like the seventh or eighth guy, and he's really been their best defenseman. Josh, real quick before we do final thoughts, and you'll lead us off in final thoughts, but we'll let Gordon lead off final thoughts, but let me ask you about the goalies. Gordon mentioned them. We had talked about before the season that being a strength for the Flyers, that they had two solid guys there in Mason and Neuvirth. Are you surprised that they haven't played well? And they haven't played well. Neuvirth, two of his goals, he should have stopped last night, 2 of the 5. Are you surprised that they've had this much trouble in goal this year?
I'm extremely surprised. You mentioned I thought that was going to be a strength for this team going in. It was kind of one of those things we didn't really talk about so much leading up to in the preseason, leading up to the start of the Flyers season. It was more about how can the younger players for the Flyers contribute, how the rookies play, will a guy like Claude Giroux return to his form he showed a few years ago? Can he be a true leader? And things of that nature. The goaltenders was kind of almost taken for granted because they both played so well last season, and we really thought that was the strength of this team. And we thought they had two good goaltenders, and, you know, they're just saying in football, if you or in hockey, in a lot of things, in hockey, actually, they're saying if you have think you have two good goaltenders, you may not have even have one good goaltender. So that sometimes can happen, but that wasn't the case with the Flyers last season. And they did have two good goaltenders. They were able to play them, substitute them in and out. And I thought that was going to be a strength of them. And so far, neither one of them has shown that they can be a true number one starter, a guy they can depend on. And it might have something to do with the defense a little bit. Maybe the defense isn't always helping them out. But as you mentioned, there were for sure two shots that should have been saved in the game. And there just have been some easy goals let in that has really surprised me so far this season.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to final thoughts. Gordon, you lead us off.
Yeah, with all due respect to my friends in Chicago or Cubs fans around the globe, I didn't really have a rooting interest. I actually kind of wanted to see Cleveland win.
I'm sorry. I almost set you up for this earlier in the show, but I didn't. Go ahead.
Yeah, this loss that we had today and this loss we had last week against Dallas and the loss we had against Detroit, they're not novelties. They're not anomalies. I've been living through these same losses my whole life, and to the point that I almost don't get upset anymore. I still get upset and demonstrative. I've suffered a long time with the Eagles. I was accused I Facebook throughout the game, and somebody I referred to the Eagles as we, and they said, "Well, we, what do you mean? You're not on the field." I've invested a lot of time, money, and emotion into this team. I can say we as much as any player on that field, most of which weren't even born when my suffering began. So, Cubs, congratulations, but the Eagles haven't won a championship in my lifetime, and that's one thing I'd like to see in my lifetime, and I can understand how a lot of these Cubs fans felt, how they felt, but unless there's going to be that much sympathy or that much caring or that much universal support, if the Eagles reach the Super Bowl again, and I doubt there will be, because we're seen as much a snowball throwing thugs, then I really can't feel all a bunch of empathy for another city. I'm an empathetic guy in general. But when it comes to sports, I'm more provincial and not so much. And one more thing I want to throw in today. I know we blamed the coaching and we blamed the offense and the defense, and really everybody played a part in this loss today. But when is roughing the kicker not roughing the kicker, and when is not a hand to a quarterback's head not a penalty? The announcer suggested that, well, if he was Eli Manning, that would have been a flag. I mean, a quarterback's a quarterback, no matter who it is. Whether it was, Chase Daniel on the field, it wouldn't make a difference. There was a hand put to the helmet of Carson Wentz that would have given Eagles a first down. I'm not saying they would have scored, but, a penalty, that is a penalty, and so is roughing the kicker. So I just want to throw that out there as well.
I hear you. And both of those were. I believe the game wasn't over officiated today, but maybe it was under officiated a little bit.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, on the other part, I was going to ask you about how you felt that the Cubs winning right as Ben called, and then he shifted us back to the Eagles. And I'm glad I didn't ask you. I'm glad we waited for your final thought to get that to get that out there. I appreciate that. Josh, your final thought.
I'm going to go to the Cubs Indians as well. Game 7, just a historic game. Touch on a little bit more about it, a different take than Gordon had. Just this game had everything you could have won, and one of the best Game 7s ever, one of the best World Series probably ever played. I rank it up there with, I haven't seen as many World Series as you guys have seen, but in my lifetime, I would say 2001 when the Arizona Diamondbacks came back to win Game 7 against the Yankees, and Randy Johnson came in relief. That was probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, World Series I ever saw. And, of course, obviously 2008, being a Phillies fan, being able to see that World Series, that was a great World Series too. But it was only a 5-game series, whereas both the 2001 and this one were 7-game series. But how about a guy this game, as I said, had everything in it, an 8-7 victory by the Cubs. They let in a run in the 10th inning. They were up 8-6, let in a run to make it 8-7. The Indians were threatening. Joe Maddon originally had brought in his 25-year-old. Aroldis Chapman was already used earlier in the game as closer, so they couldn't have Chapman close it out. So they brought in a 25-year-old to try to get the Brandon Guyer to try to get the save. He wasn't able to do it. So then they bring in a guy like Michael Montgomery, and listen to this stat. Michael Montgomery, who ends up getting the save to close it out for the Cubs to win the World Series and the 108-year drought, he had never recorded a save in the regular season ever in his career, not in the minor leagues, not in the major leagues. He had never recorded a save in his entire career. His first save he records is in Game 7 of the World Series to end the 108-year drought. So just remarkable victory for the Cubs and overall great World Series.
That is amazing, Josh. That's an amazing stat. And, you know, there's all sorts of crazy things happening in the World Series. The home run that Chapman gave up was, I think it was the first home run he's given up since he was joining the Cubs in June. Or I think that's when the trade was, June or July, when he got from the Yankees. Another great World Series, just to throw it out there, Josh, was the, maybe this is a little early for you, was the Twins-Braves in 91. Was an amazing seven-game series with, I think it was Jack Morris in Game 7 to do.
That was Kirby Puckett era. That was the Kirby Puckett era, right? I was only 7 at the time, but I do remember that a little bit as well. It was a great World Series.
Yeah, I thought that might be a little early. It was an amazing series. For my final thought, I'm going back to the Eagles, and I'm going to the Josh Huff situation. I think they made the right decision in the end, but I'm sort of troubled by the sort of stuff that happened there Wednesday and Thursday. If they're considering getting rid of Josh Huff, and that's going to, you know, that's something they're considering as they investigate this, then why is Doug Peterson out there Wednesday? And he did throw the caveat for now out there, but why is he saying we expect him to be playing Sunday against the Giants? That tells me either he wasn't on board with the decision, or that the communication wasn't there between Doug and the front office. Because, you know, he doesn't have to say that. He could say, hey, you know, we're looking at the situation, we're investigating, we don't have all the facts right now, you know, we'll get back to you later in the week. He'll get him more questions, but he can just stay with that. He definitely should not have said that he was planning on playing him Sunday. And, you know, that to me tells me there's some miscommunication. And while we're on miscommunication, now Josh Huff's a knucklehead, but somebody should have talked to him before Wednesday. First of all, why is he even speaking to the media on Wednesday? And why is he saying anything other than, you know, it's an ongoing situation, it's an ongoing investigation, and, you know, I'd love to talk to you guys, but, you know, my lawyers advise me, or the team's advised me, whoever wants to say, you know, not to talk about any details about this. Well, you know, why was he not advised to say that? And I blame his agent for that somewhat, too. But certainly the team, if he's going to go out there and talk, and like I said, he doesn't have to. He didn't have to talk. Maybe he thought it was the right thing to do. But, hey, go out there and say what he started to say, which was good, which was, you know, I've apologized to my teammates, I apologize to the team, it's something that shouldn't happen, but I can't get into the detail because it's an ongoing legal situation. So I'm really troubled by, I think there were, on both ends, there were two mistakes there made by the Eagles, and both of them were unnecessary. It created a public relations problem for them. It was already a public relations problem for them, but they made it worse by not handling it correctly. And you have to have a set plan in these situations, and everybody has to be on the same page, and they weren't. And that's a communication problem that they have to fix before, hopefully. There won't be another incident, but if there is one, they need to be on the same page from the beginning. I do want to throw in, it's not really a final thought, but college basketball kicks off next Friday. A bunch of teams in action. All the Big Five teams are in action Friday or Saturday. I think St. Joe's is on Saturday. Temple LaSalle on Friday. Villanova's on Friday. Penn's on Friday. So get excited for college basketball, those of you who are big college basketball fans. That's it for this week's show. I want to thank our caller, Ben, for asking good questions, having some good insight. Gordon Glantz, Josh Landsberg, please check out PhillyFanatics.com. Our Eagle story up right now, Rookie Mistakes. Josh's Sixers Notebook, my Flyers Notebook, lots of more good stuff to come. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next Sunday after the Eagles-Falcons game. Have a great week, everybody.